This is Chapter 7, and the story is called The Bob's Messengers. You remember we heard in another story about those 18 persons who had found the Bob? What did he call them? Right, letters of the living. You know, you send a letter with good news. Well, these were like living letters, and they were carrying the good news of the Word of God everywhere. They were sort of like a teaching committee, only something, of course, much more exalted and better than that. Like a traveling teacher, such as your mother and your father are on holidays and weekends, or your brothers and sisters, and maybe soon you will be too. Well, these were the very first of the great traveling teachers of the faith, and they were called the Letters of the Living. Now the Bob thought it was time for all of them to scatter all over the land and tell the people that the Promised One had come, that it was a new day. So one day the Bob called them all together to talk with them, as sort of like a conference. Mullah Hussein was the first to be called to the Bob, and because the Bob loved Mullah Hussein so much, he told him just a tiny bit about something very wonderful that was going to happen to him, to Mullah Hussein, a little later on. Mullah Hussein was to go to many cities to teach the faith and to give his message. And then he was to go to a great city called Tehran. The Bab said, "A secret lies hidden in that city, and when it is manifest, it will turn the earth into a paradise." You see, the Bab didn't tell Mullah Hussein what that wonderful thing was that he would find in Tehran. But Mullah Hussein knew it must be something very beautiful if it was going to turn the earth into a paradise. I mean, wouldn't you think so? That means make it like heaven. And later, you'll find out what this great secret was that Mullah Hussein discovered. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if we could have been there and to hear what the Bob said to his letters of the living when he sent them out to do the teaching? It was called, you know, in the Dawnbreakers, The Address to the Letters of the Living. My, that's one of the most beautiful stories and one of the most beautiful passages in the whole book. And so he's going to send them out to teach. Someone who must have been very wise wrote down the very things that the Bob said so we can read about them today word for word, even though we couldn't been there and have heard him say them. The Bob told the letters of the living that they were the bearers of the name of God in that day. That means that they were the ones who would tell everyone about the new teacher that God had sent. The Bob told them that they must do only what they knew God wished them to do, because then the people would know they were speaking the truth and would listen to them, that their lives must be wonderful. They must be outstanding people, and not only just have good words, but good deeds too. Now that's a good thing for us to remember today, isn't it? I mean, that's what our faith is all about. Not to talk a good deal about what we're going to do, but let our hands help other people and our feet run errands for them. Then everyone will know that we love God and we're trying to be like Him, and we won't have to talk about it. They can tell by the way we live. The Bob told the letters of the living also that God was very strong and powerful, and that He would help them with all the hard things they had to face. All they needed to do was to trust in God and to know that He would help them win the victory. This is the way the Bob said it. These are his words. Arise in His name, in God's name. Put your trust wholly in Him and be assured of ultimate victory. How exciting it would have been to hear those words ring out in the voice of the Bob himself. No wonder the letters of the living felt so strong and so joyful when they went away, even though they must have been sad at leaving the Bob. They wanted to go out and teach, but of course they wanted to be with him all the time too. But they went, and they scattered all over the land. Each one went first to his own hometown to give everyone there the message. That was the Bob's idea. Isn't that wonderful? Many people, of course, didn't want to listen. They thought the letters of the living were mistaken about what they were saying about the Promised One. And some of the teachers were put in prison, and some were beaten, and some were stoned, and some were punished in other ways, and they suffered a great deal for teaching the cause of God. But they remembered that the Bab had told them not to be afraid, that nothing could harm them until they had finished their work. And so they went right on teaching about the Promised One and about how much better the world was going to be because of him. Of course, there were people who were glad to hear them, who were excited about the story. Here's the story of a man who listened to every word they had to say. One day at the house of a friend, this man heard Mullah Hussein tell about the Promised One. When the talk was finished, he asked eagerly, "What is his name?" "I am not permitted to tell you his name," Mullah Hussein answered. "But if you will pray, God will help you know him." And so the man asked his friend if he might go into another room at once, where he could be alone and pray. He did not even wish to wait until he went to his own house. He wanted to find out right away. And while he was praying, suddenly he remembered the face of a young man whom he had seen praying in the shrine in Karbala. And now he saw this young man's face again in his prayers. In his vision, the young man seemed to smile at him, and he went forward to throw himself at his feet. He was bending toward the ground when the vision disappeared, but the man felt sure that in his prayer he had seen the Promised One. When he ran out into the other room and told the others about his vision, Mullah Hussein told him that he had indeed seen and found the Bab. "But don't declare your vision to anyone," Mullah Hussein told him, "for the time has not yet arrived." And then he promised to meet him later in Shiraz. And Mullah Hussein said, if possible, they would go together to see the Promised One. There are many more exciting stories like that, but that's all for this time. But do you know what? Next time, we're going to meet Baha'u'llah. Imagine that. We're going to make the journey with Mullah Hussein. So I think we better pray about it, don't you? That's what Mullah Hussein did. Well, this is the time that with Mullah Hussein we're going to visit the capital, Persia, Tehran, where Baha'u'llah was born. This is chapter 8, and it's called The Message to Baha'u'llah. You see, while the other letters of the living were teaching in their own hometowns, Mullah Hussein went to a great city named Tehran. Each day he would leave his room early in the morning, and he would tell whomever would listen to him about the Promised One, and then he would return after sunset. Do you remember what the Bab told Mullah Hussein about Tehran? If you don't, let me tell you again. These were his words. "A secret lies hidden in that city. When manifest, it shall turn the earth into a paradise." How often Mullah Hussein must have thought about those words and wondered about them, and wondered what it was he would discover in that wonderful city. Indeed, he must have guessed part of the secret, because he believed that in Tehran he would find the other Promised One, the one who was to come after the Bab and shed his light upon the whole world. And you remember how we learned in another story that God was sending not one, but two divine teachers. Well, knowing this, Mullah Hussein must have suspected that this might be in Tehran where he'd find the other one. And he was probably watching for that. You know, sometimes things happen in a very wonderful way in this world if we love God enough and we try to do what he wishes. We make our hearts like a mirror. You know, a mirror, when you shine it and polish it, all of a sudden the sun is shining in it and it shows in our faces. And we find out things if our hearts are pure. If we pray and do good deeds, God helps us. We better remember that, because that's what Mullah Hussein did, and that's how he found out the secret in Tehran. Like this, One night, about 12 o'clock, a man knocked on his door. Mullah Hussein wasn't expecting anyone, but he invited the man in and immediately began to talk to him about the Bab, the Promised One, like he always did. Finally, he asked the man, "Where do you live?" And the man said, "My home is in Nur." And Mullah Hussein asked him, "By any chance, do you know of a young man there, or someone who is very wise and very kind, and someone who spends his time helping the poor people and those who are in trouble? Do you know anyone like that?" "Yes, as a matter of fact, I do," the man answered. "I go often to his house." Well, this answer made Mullah Hussein very excited and happy. And the man was astonished that the answer made Mullah Hussein so happy. He couldn't understand why. Mullah Hussein, you see, didn't tell him why he was trying to find out this information. He asked the man to deliver a scroll for him, or a letter, to this young man, and bring back the answer, if there should be one. "Give him the scroll at dawn," Mullah Hussein said. Well, maybe you've guessed who this young man in Nur was, that he was the other Promised One, the second divine teacher whom God was going to send. And his name was Baha'u'llah, the glory of God. Of course, the messenger didn't know who he was, but just the sound of his voice as Baha'u'llah read the letter aloud made the messenger very happy. He liked to be in Baha'u'llah's presence, and he didn't know why. And Baha'u'llah gave him a message and a gift of sugar and tea to carry back to Mullah Hussein. This may seem like a strange gift to you, sugar and tea. But the people in Persia didn't have much tea and sugar at that time, and so they were always grateful to receive them. I'll tell you something, I wouldn't care what Baha'u'llah sent to me, any kind. If he just looked at me, I think that is the greatest gift in the world, wouldn't you? Well, when Mullah Hussein received the message and the gift from Baha'u'llah, he felt exactly the same way. He was so excited and happy, he could hardly speak. He jumped up, he took the gift from the man, and he kissed it. And then he threw his arms around the messenger and said, "My dearly beloved friend, I only pray that even as you have rejoiced my heart, God may fill your heart with such gladness." Well, I tell you, that man couldn't understand what made Mullah Hussein feel so tremendously happy. Who was this man who he had taken the letter to, he wondered. What was so wonderful about that gift? Well, a few days later, when Mullah Hussein had left Tehran to go to another city, he called this same messenger to him, and he said, "Don't breathe a word to anyone of what you have heard or seen. Let this be a secret hidden within your breast." And he explained that if he should tell the young man's name, his enemies might try to harm him. Rather, Mullah Hussein said, he should pray that God would take care of this young man, so that he might help the poor and all who were in trouble, because it would have a great effect upon the whole world someday. Well, that's the way Mullah Hussein first found out about Baha'u'llah, the other Promised One. He knew, however, that he mustn't tell anyone about him until the right time came. He must tell them first about the Bab, and that a new, beautiful day had come to the people who lived on the earth. And later, when the right time did come, the Bab told them about Baha'u'llah. He wrote about Baha'u'llah, the one whom God would make manifest. That means that God would make it plain to everyone when he came. And the Bab told us exactly when Baha'u'llah would appear. Isn't that wonderful? Well, there's a lot more stories exactly like that coming soon. This is another story about Baha'u'llah and about his father. This is chapter 9, and it's called The Dream of Baha'u'llah's Father. Of course, you remember last time how we found out that Baha'u'llah lived in Tehran and that he was the second Promised One and great teacher that was coming? Well, one night, while Baha'u'llah was a little boy, his father had a strange dream about him. In this dream, he saw his son Baha'u'llah swimming in a great ocean, and his body shone so brightly that even the water around him was lighted up, and rays of light went out from his head in all directions. That's a beautiful picture, isn't it? Baha'u'llah's hair was long and black, and as he swam, it floated out on the water all around him. As Baha'u'llah's father watched, a great number of little fishes came, and each one took in its mouth the end of one of the hairs of the little boy Baha'u'llah's head. And after that, wherever Baha'u'llah swam, the fishes came too. But they didn't harm the little boy Baha'u'llah. They didn't even prevent him from swimming wherever he wanted to go, in whatever direction. They just came along. This dream was so very real to Baha'u'llah's father that he went to a wise man to see if the man could tell him what the dream meant. The wise man told Baha'u'llah's father that the ocean around his son Baha'u'llah was the world, and the many, many fishes were the troubles Baha'u'llah would have in giving his message from God to the people of the world. But they would press in all about him from all sides, but they would not be able to keep him from carrying out his work for God. And I'll bet you also it meant that in the future all the peoples of the world would gather around that way. That's a lovely dream, isn't it? Baha'u'llah's father was a very rich man and lived in a very great house, or a mansion, in which there were beautiful furniture and beautiful decorations. He was a very kind man and very generous. He gave a great deal of money to help the poor people around him. Of course, he had many friends, and he was always happiest when he was doing something for someone else. Well, this went on for 20 years, and then finally, trouble came. First, a flood came down from the mountains near the village where Baha'u'llah's father lived, and the water swept along and carried away everything in its path. The flood carried away half the mansion and all its beautiful furniture and decorations. Baha'u'llah's father was not as rich now, but still he went on helping those who needed him in every way that he could. Then some of those whom he thought were his friends did all they could to take away the position that he held, but still he remained calm and happy, and he wouldn't quarrel with them no matter what they did to him. When Baha'u'llah grew up, he started to carry God's message to the people. He didn't tell them that he was a divine teacher. It was not the time. He told them about the Bab and the message the Bab had brought. Baha'u'llah went first to his hometown, and here the people flocked to hear him. It just seemed as if they couldn't hear enough of Baha'u'llah. Just to hear his voice and to be around them made them love him very much. Some of those people who had been leaders in the neighborhood asked Baha'u'llah to tell them about the great city where he'd been, about Tehran. They wanted to hear about the Shah, or about the court and the king and the country and all the things that were happening. But Baha'u'llah said he didn't come there to tell them about these things, that he didn't care for these things. He wanted to tell them about God and the Promised One. He wanted them to know about the Bab and the New Day. He would go a long distance at any time to tell someone about the Bab's message. I think there's a good lesson there for us to learn there, don't you? I mean, that's the way it should be. It's never too much trouble to go as far as needed, whatever time it took to tell the people about the Word of God. That's the way Baha'u'llah was. It's the most important thing in all the world, isn't it? It's the only way the world can be made better. That's why you should be happy when you see the members of your family doing what Baha'u'llah did, traveling and teaching and telling people about the great new day. Here's something very wonderful. People said that even the stones and the trees around Baha'u'llah seemed different because he was there. Everything seemed to grow better and seemed to say, "Look, here is the beauty of God." And later, one of the names of Baha'u'llah was the Blessed Beauty. Well, this is the way Baha'u'llah started out immediately to carry God's message to the people. But even yet, he didn't tell them that he was the second divine teacher about whom they had read in the Quran. About this same time, the Bab was thinking of going on a long journey to another city, a holy city called Mecca. There was one reason why he didn't wish to go. This reason was that the people around him needed to hear his message so much. But one day he heard the news from Mullah Hussein that Baha'u'llah was teaching, and this made the Bab very happy, for he knew that now he could go on his journey to Mecca, and there still would be someone telling the people about the Promised One and the new day. And you know something? We're going to make that journey to the holy city of Mecca with the Bab the next time. Aren't we lucky? Well, I hope you're ready for this story. We're all going to go out to sea in a small boat. This is chapter 10, and it's called The Storm. Did you ever ride on a lovely big boat with its comfortable furniture, just like a beautiful house? In the days when the Bab and Baha'u'llah lived, there were no boats of this kind. There were only small boats, which didn't even have engines, and they had to depend upon the wind for their sails. And of course, they couldn't travel very fast. Well, one day the Bab decided to go to a city called Mecca. Mecca was the city where Muhammad had lived when he was teaching upon the earth. Every year, many, many people who had loved Muhammad and who had studied his book, the Quran, went to Mecca to pray, because Mecca was a holy city that people visit. You know, just as the Baha'is go to Haifa and Acre, and the followers of Christ to Bethlehem and Nazareth, and those who loved Moses and the Old Testament prophets go to Jerusalem, because the holy cities are very special, and we honor and respect all of them. Well, the Bab knew that when he went to Mecca, he would meet many people there, and he could give them all God's new message. So he started out with Qudus, one of the letters of the living, and his servant. To get to the city Mecca, they had to take a boat. Because there were only small boats in those days, it took 2 long months to reach Mecca. Of course, today you could fly there in an airplane in probably less than 2 hours. But at that time, the weather wasn't too good either. So the Bab and Qudus had a terrible time. A fierce storm came up, and the big waves must have looked like mountains to the people in that small ship. It tossed them about so much that all of them became seasick. But the Bab and Qudus didn't seem to be uncomfortable at all. The rest of the travelers were afraid of the storm, but these two knew that God would take care of them, so they feared nothing. Every day Qudus would write down on paper the beautiful prayers and sayings which the Bab would dictate to him. Even when the storm was at its worst, and the other travelers feared that the boat might sink and go down in the sea at any moment, and they'd all be drowned, the Bab and Qudus went right on with their work as if nothing had happened. And they had trouble in another way, too. The journey had taken so long that they found themselves at last without enough water to drink. You know that the water in the ocean is not good to drink because it's so salty. If you do drink it, you'll just be all the more thirsty. The Bab wrote to someone that for days they had to satisfy their thirst with the juice of lemons instead of water. Those who were on that little boat must have suffered a great deal. But something good came out of their suffering. When the Bab saw how they suffered, he prayed to God that ocean travel might be made easier. And he prayed that there might not be so much danger with that kind of travel. And as you know, God answered the Bab's prayer. In a very few years, men learned how to make larger boats and better boats, which storms could not harm as much. And they learned to use engines instead of sails, so that they could go faster. And just think, now it only takes a few days to make that same journey which it took the Bab and Qudus 2 months. Of course, we know that it was the prayers of the Bab that made these changes. But at that time, the people didn't know that. They didn't stop to think that it was God who had sent them all these good things. You know, if I may tell you, when I was writing a book, I found that before 1844, hardly anything had been discovered. And the people in our own patent office in Washington, they were thinking of closing it down because they said everything's been discovered. But then suddenly, from 1844 on, all these new wonderful inventions came. It was a new beginning with the Baha'i faith. And so all those wonderful prayers of the Bab help to make these things come true. And you know, in spite of the hard journey that the Bab and Qaddus had, at last they safely reached the town on the seashore, which was nearest to where they were going. And from there they had to travel on camels across a hot, sandy desert before they could reach Mecca. It was called the Holy City because Muhammad had lived there. Imagine that. Now they're going to go across the desert on camels. I mean, like the camels you've seen in the zoo. The ship of the desert, they call camels. I guess you know that. And there they're going across the desert, and suddenly there before them is the beautiful Arabian city, the holy city of Mecca. Boy, I sure wish I'd been there to make that journey. I love the desert, and I'm going to tell you more about the desert next time. Well, here's the story I promised you. Chapter 11, The Adventure in the Desert. Between the city of Mecca and the place where the Bab and Qaddus left the boat, there was a sandy desert which they had to cross. You know that in the desert there is not much water. Only now and then travelers come to a well, an oasis they call it. And then they have to carry with them enough water to last from place to place, or until they reach the next oasis or well. Horses need a great deal of water, and for this reason they are very seldom used in the desert. Now we can travel across it in automobiles or above it in airplanes. But at the time the Bab lived on the earth, there were no automobiles or airplanes. And do you know how they traveled in the desert then? Sure you do, as I told you last time, right? The camels. Yes, sir, there's only one animal that can go a long time without water, and that animal is a camel. Nobody else. So, when they wanted to cross the desert, they had to ride on camels, naturally. And that is what the Bab did on his journey to Mecca. Qaddus, however, wouldn't ride. He wanted to walk beside the Bab all the way, holding the bridle of the Bab's camel. Qaddus felt that in this way, he would be better able to protect his master, the Bab, in case there was any danger. And sometimes on those trips, there is danger. And every night from the time darkness came until the sun came up in the morning, Qaddus would spend most of the hours praying and watching that no harm came to the Bab. How much he must have loved the Bab to do this. And all the time he was very happy. Of course, you know the sun is very hot in the desert. There's no shade at all. And the sand grows so hot, it's hard to travel across it, I'll tell you that. For this reason, they always started very early in the morning before the sun came up while it was still fairly cool. Well, one morning the Bab stopped at a well and got off his camel for his morning prayer. You see, he never forgot to pray because he knew that by praying he would stay close to God and know what God wished him to do. We should remember that too. Well, while the Bab was praying, a man who lived on the desert, wandering from place to place, suddenly appeared near the travelers, and seeing them praying, he crept softly up and snatched the Bab's saddlebag that was lying on the ground and ran away with it. Now, do you remember that while they were on the boat, Qaddus wrote down the prayers and the on paper and all the beautiful sayings of the Bab? Well, sir, these prayers were very precious, of course, for they were spoken by the promised one of God for the new day, and they would bring a great blessing to all who read them. Well, all of these papers were in that saddlebag which the desert man came in and stole and ran off with. The servant wanted to run after the thief, but the Bab motioned him to come back. Now, that may seem very strange to us, doesn't it? I mean that the Bab allowed that man to carry away the papers, which were so precious. I mean, he was the promised one. He probably could have caught him if he wanted to. But this is the reason the Bab gave. He said the man who ran away with the papers would carry them to different places in the desert, wherever he went. And in this way, many people would read the words of the Bab and know about the coming of the Promised One. And probably these people wouldn't know about it at all in any other way because they never went to the big cities far away, and that's how they'd find out. Isn't that lovely? So the Bab said, don't grieve because of his action. This was decreed by God, the Ordainer, the Almighty.
Well, that means don't be sorry about it. It's a good thing. God wished the man, the thief, to carry off the papers. So don't worry about it. The Bob arrived safely at the holy city of Mecca. He did exactly what he wanted to do. He gave God's message to all the people he met, and I tell you, that was a wonderful journey. This is chapter 12, the story of Sadek. After staying in Mecca for a time, the Bab and Qudus returned to their homes. And on the way back, the Bab told Qudus that when they reached their own country, they would have to separate so that they could teach in different places. They couldn't always be together. And he warned Qudus that the people would be very cruel to him, that they would not listen to him, and finally, they would kill him. The Bab promised, however, that a great joy would come to Qudus because he would die for God's cause as a martyr. And he also promised that before Qudus died, he would have another great blessing. He would meet personally the second divine teacher, the second promised one, who God was sending to the earth, so that he, Qudus, would not only meet one of them, he would meet them both, the Bab and Baha'u'llah. Well, you can imagine how happy that promise must have made Qudus. He didn't fear anything that the people could do to him after that. All the letters of the living who loved the Bab were very brave because they knew this great secret about the Bab and about the teacher who was yet to come. And of course, everything happened just exactly as the Bab had said. Many people didn't believe the message, and they were very cruel. One of those who did believe the words of Qudus was Mullah Sadek, a teacher of the Quran. He was an old man, and everywhere he went, Sadek told of the new teacher or the new prophet whom God had sent, until finally those who didn't wish to hear about it decided that he, Mullah Sadek, must be stopped, and so they arrested him and ordered that he be scourged, that means whipped, with 1,000 strokes. Can you imagine that? You know something? I stood in that very spot where that happened. And when I was there, I remembered them, and I prayed. Well, now, as I said, Mullah Sadek was an old man, not young like Qudus. And they didn't think that old man could stand such a lashing. But those who were watching had a great surprise. Well, what do you think? Mullah Sadek was calm and smiling, didn't seem to be feeling it at all. All the time he was being whipped. The people just couldn't understand that. Well, the truth is that Mullah Sadek later said he wasn't feeling the lash. He told a friend afterwards that the first 7 strokes, they were terribly painful. But after that, suddenly, he actually wondered if the strokes were being applied to his own body, because Mullah Sadek said he couldn't feel them. In fact, he even put his hand over his mouth to keep from laughing aloud, so happy he was. Now I can realize, he said, how God, the Almighty Deliverer, is able in the twinkling of an eye to turn pain into ease and sorrow into gladness. God is still able to take away our pain and make us happy if we turn to Him and trust Him and believe in Him with confidence, as Mullah Sadek did. And he wasn't the only one who was happy to be serving the Bab, so happy that he didn't mind it when people were cruel to him. In fact, everyone who saw those who gave the Bab's message, well, they just couldn't understand how these people could feel no fear at the terrible things that were done to them. Of course, we know the secret. They were sure that God was taking care of them every moment, and that nothing could happen which He didn't wish to happen to them. And of course, they were happy because they loved the Bab so dearly. Because it always makes us happy to love people and to serve a promised one. And sometimes they do suffer, just as the disciples of Christ were persecuted and suffered, remember, and were killed. But they didn't mind, because they loved Christ and they loved God and they were helping the people of the world. And the letters of the living, such as Qudus, suffered too. But it's like a seed, you know. You put it into the ground, that's a sacrifice. You think, gee, that's the end of the seed. But because of that sacrifice, from that seed grows up a tree, and there's fruits on it to nourish the people and shade to protect the people. That's the way we serve. And when we love a messenger of God, no sacrifice is too great because the work we are doing is a great work in the world. And we're willing to suffer so that other people in the world and other children won't have to suffer. And that's worthwhile, isn't it? This is the story of how the Bob was taken a prisoner. It's chapter 13, and it's called The Bob is Taken Prisoner. Well, after Mullah Sadek had been treated so cruelly, as we remember from last time, he and Quddus had to leave the city of Shiraz. The governor wouldn't let them stay any longer, for fear the people would begin to believe their message and turn against him, the governor, because they were so eloquent, and the things that they said really touched the hearts of the people. But Mullah Sadek and Quddus, they didn't mind going out of the city, because then they could give the message in a new place. After they left the city, the wicked governor decided that now he'd make the Bob a prisoner and make him pay for all of this, so that he couldn't talk to the people in any way. So the governor sent out a company of soldiers on horseback to find the Bob and bring him back in chains. As the soldiers rode out along a very lonely road, they saw a handsome young man wearing a green sash. He was on horseback, and his servant walked behind him. When the soldiers rode up, the young man saluted them and asked where they were going. The leader of the soldiers thought it best not to tell this stranger why they were there, so he replied, "We are doing an errand for the governor." At these words, the young man smiled and said, "The governor has sent you to arrest me. Here I am. Do with me as you please. By coming out to meet you, I have made it easier for you to find me." The soldier was astonished at this answer. He couldn't understand why the Bob hadn't run away when he saw them, like most people would have done, instead of coming out to meet them and giving himself up. He didn't want to take the Bob prisoner at all. He was so enchanted and charmed with him, and the soldier pretended not to hear what the Bob was saying and started to leave. But the Bob rode up to him and declared that he had never said anything that was not the truth, that he had no wish except to help other people. "I know that you are seeking for me," he said, "and I prefer to deliver myself into your hands rather than subject you and your companions to unnecessary annoyance for my sake by searching for me." The soldier was so overcome by these words that he got down from his horse and kissed the stirrup of the Bob. And he begged the Bob to run away, to escape from that place, now, and not to let the wicked and cruel governor take him prisoner. He told the Bob that he could trust himself and all his soldiers. None of them would say where the Bob had gone, where he had gone. Of course, the Bob refused to run away. He assured the soldier that God would reward him for his kindness, but that he could not run away. He told the soldiers that God would protect him and that no harm could befall him until his work was done. And when it was done, the Bob said he would be very happy to die for God, whom he loved. "So," he said, "here am I. Deliver me into the hands of your master, and don't be afraid, for no one will blame you." So they went together to the city of Shiraz. But the soldiers would not chain the Bob as they'd been told to do. All the way to the city, the Bob rode on ahead of the company of soldiers as free as they were. And when they reached Shiraz, the governor asked the Bob many questions and spoke to him in such a way, such an angry way, that it made the others who heard him very angry too. They didn't like the way the governor talked to the Bob. The governor didn't wish to do anything, however, that would make the people turn against him, so at last he let the Bob go. But before he freed him, he made the Bob's uncle, who lived in the city, pay a great deal of money, a ransom, for freeing the Bob. And the governor also made the Bob's uncle sign a paper saying that if the governor ever wanted the Bob again, this uncle would promise to surrender him and bring him to the governor. The Bob's mother and his wife were with the uncle, and you can imagine how glad they were that the Bob was freed
and they were all together again. And for a time the Bab lived with them very quietly and happily, seeing no one except his closest friends. And you know, there wouldn't be many such peaceful, happy days left for the Bab on this earth. So it makes us all very happy to know that he did spend this quiet, pleasant, happy time among his family and his friends. Well, this is one of my very favorite stories of the Dawnbreakers. This is chapter 14, and it's called The Snow White Bird. This is the story of the way in which a beautiful white bird helped someone to find the Bab. The name of the man who found him was Abdul Karim. For many years, Abdul Karim had wanted very much to know more about God and about the great teachers whom God had sent to the earth. Abdul Karim knew that to do this, he'd have to spend many years studying and praying. All day he studied, and he talked over with his friends the things he had learned. And sometimes he studied far into the night. At the end of 2 years, those who were teachers of the Quran told him that now he too was ready to teach, that he knew as much as they did. Of course, Abdul Karim was very happy to hear this, and his father wished to give a great feast for him to celebrate. But Abdul Karim asked his father to wait for a few days. You see, this is the reason that Abdul Karim asked his father to wait. They said that he knew as much as they did and he was ready to teach. But the truth is, Abdul Karim didn't feel that he was wise enough or close enough to God to teach others about the Quran. Even though he had studied for so many years, he knew that he didn't know as much as he should, and he knew that a teacher of the Quran should not make mistakes. So Abdul Karim went to his room, and all night he prayed, and he asked God to tell him what to do. And while he prayed, he had a vision. He seemed to see a man talking to a great number of people. Their faces shone with happiness, as though if they were filled with delight. And the man was telling them about a certain verse that Abdul Karim knew from the Quran. Abdul Karim could hear the man talking, and so he started toward him. And as he moved toward him, he heard this verse from the Quran. And just as he reached him, the man disappeared from sight, and he woke up. The next day, Abdul Karim was telling about his vision to a very wise man whom he knew. "Well," that wise man said, "from your description, that man must be Sayyid Kazim, who is now teaching in Karbala. Everyone who hears him loves Sayyid Kazim," the wise man said. Well, this was the kind of news that made Abdul Karim very happy, because that's what he wanted to find out, somebody who could tell him more about the truth. So that very same day, he packed up and he left for Karbala, and there he saw Sayyid Kazim. And you know what? As he came into the public square, there was a man talking, Sayyid Kazim, and it was the very man he had seen in his dream. And do you know what else? He was speaking that very same verse from the Quran. He was telling also those who were listening about the Promised One. "The Promised One," Sayyid Kazim said, "lives in the midst of this people. Prepare the way for him and purify yourselves so that you may recognize his beauty. You shouldn't rest for one moment until you find him." Well, Abdul Karim stayed in Karbala with Sayyid Kazim for quite some time, and then finally went home. Every day he was very busy, but at night he prayed and thought about the Promised One who was living amongst them, and he asked God to help him find that wonderful soul. One night, Abdul Karim, in the midst of his prayers, had another vision. He saw a bird, white as snow, flying above his head. It alighted on a tree beside him, and in a very gentle voice, the snow-white bird said, "Are you seeking the manifestation, O Abdul Karim?
"Lo, the year 60. And then it flew away. And he woke up from his vision, and he was very happy. "Are you seeking the messenger of God, O Abdul Karim?" the bird had told him. "Then be aware for the year 60, the year 1260. As you know, that's 1844 in our calendar. Well, that was the vision he had. And every day Abdul Karim thought more and more about that white bird. And a few years later, when he heard about the Bab, Abdul Karim hurried to Shiraz to see him. And what do you think happened? The Bab was teaching from the Quran, and Abdul Karim came into the room. He stopped. He looked at the Bab, who stopped his teaching, and spoke to Abdul Karim in a voice which sounded exactly like that of the white bird. And what do you think he said? He said, "Are you seeking the manifestation, O Abdul Karim?" Well, you remember that those were the very same words which the white bird had spoken. And then Abdul Karim knew that he had found the promised one, and he knelt at the Bab's feet, too happy to speak. And as the white bird had said, that was the year 60, 1260, 1844. Isn't that a wonderful story? It shows us how God will help us if our hearts are pure and we're sincere and really want to be better people and are trying to help others. I tell you, I'd sure like to see a snow-white bird like that. And thanks to such people as Abdul Karim and the other early heroes and heroines of God, we know about the manifestation, about the messenger of God. Aren't we lucky to be Baha'is? I mean, really lucky?